Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, Fightful Faithful. I am Robert DeFelice, and I'm here with a face you might know and a name you might know, Gregory Iron. Very big independent star, obviously the cerebral palsy having professional wrestler, one of the members of 440, terrorizing GCW. Greg, how you doing today?
Doing great, man. I'm finally, we could sit down and finally make this happen. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, so this is cool.
I had been a fan of yours since the MySpace days. Yeah. I remember I had a friend who told me, hey, there's a wrestler with cerebral palsy. For those who don't know, I also have cerebral palsy, and I've been watching Greg since about 2009. So this is a great honor for me, and it's cool to sit down with you.
Makes me feel really old.
Yeah, me too. It's very strange. I was just about entering high school when I found you. So how are things, all things considered? You know, despite the pandemic, GCW's run some shows, and you've been on those shows with 440. You even had your own show as part of Fight Forever. Eric Bischoff did the intro. What was that like for you? How's the whole independent scene in 2021 treating Gregory Iron?
Man, I'm luckier than most because a lot of guys have been out of work because of the pandemic. And while I'm not as busy as I was before the world changed, I'm fortunate to still be pretty active with wrestling, and GCW's making that happen for me. And just the 440 thing has really blown up since everything has gone down. Especially, I think what really helped us was right before the pandemic started is we had that big show in Jersey, Run Ricky Run, where we really started a riot after we beat Nick Gage. And I think that really helped our momentum once everything stopped, because I think it gave people this almost this to be continued type scenario, like, okay, well, what was going to happen next? How long do we have to wait? And luckily, there wasn't too much of a break, but I think it really helped the popularity of the things that myself, Ricky Shane Page, Atticus Cody, Eddie Only, Bobby Beverly, or Brian have been doing. And I mean, we've been selling more merch than we've ever had in our entire careers, and just the social media presence is great. The videos that we've been creating is awesome, and just the overall interactions at GCW and other places that we go, just the real animosity and the heat that we have when we go places, which I feel like is hard to come by in this decade. It's been a really cool experience.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that, because GCW and a lot of the popular independent wrestlers, it's very much like a family. The fans know the wrestlers know the fans, the regulars, they all interact on Twitter. And 440 has genuine heat. You will hear a chant of RS Pussy and just visceral heat. And what is that like for you, knowing that you're actually able to get that reaction in an era where everything is so wide open?
I mean, I love it, because as a professional wrestler, you know, we live in this time where kayfabe is dead, and the wrestling fans are a lot smarter to the ins and outs of professional wrestling. But I think and I've said this several times before, I think the only magic that we have is, as performers, are those moments where we make people suspend their disbelief. And I think a lot of the fans that are chanting the things they're chanting and doing the things they're doing, they're in on the joke. They're in on the bit. I think they want someone to boo and they want someone to cheer, because wrestling fans are smarter than I think most people give them credit for. But there are those people that can't blur the lines between reality and fiction. And there's a genuine love for Nick Gage and guys like Essie and Alley Cat and Mance Warner. And there's a genuine hatred for anybody that opposes those characters. And I think that's a testament to the emotional investment that those characters have created for themselves. And I think 440 has just proved that in a day and age where I think a lot of people that follow professional wrestling or deep in professional wrestling have this belief that the athleticism is what really matters and there's shades of gray and we don't really need good guys and bad guys because everything is exposed. I think what 440 has done is proven that people do want to emotionally invest. I mean, can you imagine going to watch a movie where you can't really decipher if there's a defined good guy or a defined bad guy? I mean, there's so much television in this day and age where, for example, Breaking Bad, there are layers. Like, you can start out loving someone and something can happen where you're sort of torn about how to feel about them. But either way, they create this dynamic where you're going to ultimately love them at some point or you're going to hate them. And I think that's the beauty of professional wrestling and what we're creating right now. I think we're just proving that you got to love someone and you got to hate someone, and people want that.
I think that's a great way to put it. I know this day and age, it seems like they want so much transparency, and it's good to know that even though I think everybody knows Gregory Iron, despite the 440 stuff, is a good person behind the scenes, it's important that you're still able to get that reaction. That's because you guys are doing the job well, because we've seen a lot of heels who will just get cheered and maybe even work with that. So it's nice to see you guys, and specifically you, embrace that heel side, because for a long time you were just the inspirational wrestler that has cerebral palsy. So to see you show layers and add a new dimension is very cool to see.
I appreciate that. Well, and it's one of those things too, where, you know, not everything is just as easy as good and bad, you know, like just because I have a disability, you know, as a character doesn't necessarily make me a good person. I think that's what I wanted to show, that like, I'm okay with embracing the idea that at the end of the day, when this is all over, I'm probably going to be known as the pro wrestler that had cerebral palsy. And that's fine, because like yourself, there's a lot of people with disabilities or know people with disabilities that are inspired by that story. However, you know as well as I do, you're a human being. You're more than just someone with cerebral palsy. And, you know, loving wrestling as much as I do, I know that there's elements of myself that I wanted to be able to show, or elements that I could portray that go beyond being the guy with cerebral palsy. Again, just, again, I mentioned something about layers. And when I do seminars, which I was doing very often before the pandemic, and I've had the opportunity to do some during the pandemic, which I'm very thankful for, one thing I always talk about are the layers of a character, and how every person we meet in our lives, every relationship that we have, whether it's good or bad, to build the layer to who you are as a character. And I think that's what happens in professional wrestling. I think every wrestler that I've ever wrestled, every wrestler or character that I've ever interacted with on screen, every promo, every good and bad interaction has created an element of Gregory Iron that perhaps before I met that person, I didn't know how to convey on the camera. No different than in life, there are some things that you're trying to find about ourselves, things that we like, people that we want to surround ourselves with, who we are. We don't find those things unless we find these things that we can emotionally invest in, things that we like, things that have hurt us, things that have made us stronger, and that creates who you are. And I think that's what happens as a wrestling character. And so, you know, I've been able to show these sides of me through the good and bad that depict someone with a disability that isn't necessarily the best thing, because Robert, you know as well as I do that there's some people out there that do have disability but exploit that. And so I wanted to show that element of that, that, you know, even though I have this disability, perhaps I'm a I'm a scumbag piece of garbage, and I'm going to take advantage of that and make it more than it is. And just, I like the idea of being able to show multiple sides of who I am as a character and as a performer, because I would like to be known as not the pro wrestler with cerebral palsy, but a pro wrestler that just happens to have cerebral palsy. Because I think when you book an African American, you don't book him as, here's the black wrestler. He's a wrestler that happens to be black. You know, like, I think we have to change the perception of how things are viewed. And again, at the end of the day, if I'm remembered as a guy with cerebral palsy, that's fine. But I really take a lot of pride in being able to show all the different sides of me and show that I'm not just this one-dimensional white meat baby face.
You said that so well, because there have been times, I know, growing up for myself, where people will want to hand you things just because, you know, you have cerebral palsy, let's make it easy. And there's a point in my life where I said, you know, I have to prove this is just the additional aspect that you're getting because you're getting me, but it's very important to me to, let's say, like, not just be given a job because you're working within a program that happens to say, we have a certain quota to fill. You know, right. You want to be beyond that quota, and I think you nailed that perfectly. And now, I mean, there will be other wrestlers with cerebral palsy down the line, I'm sure, but you're always going to be that pioneer, and you've shown that there can be layers to being a wrestler with CP. But that being said, if we go back to the beginning, what was the original journey like for you? Because obviously, when you say I have cerebral palsy, and people look at maybe something like your grip or something, and they think, is this guy going to be able to protect me in the ring? What kind of hurdles did you face early on?
It was really just a matter of finding my strengths and weaknesses in professional wrestling and accentuating the positives and hiding the negatives. But also, you know, more so than the disability, I think people think that was the biggest obstacle, but I think the biggest obstacle was myself, because, you know, I don't know your exact experiences growing up, Robert, but I was bullied, I was made fun of, and then I didn't have the best home life. And so, especially after high school, you know, I felt like I always had to be on the defense in high school. I didn't realize that there was a light at the end of that tunnel. So when I left high school and I got into professional wrestling, I thought that I had to tell people what I was going to do. I had that chip on my shoulder that in some ways people did have a chip to drive me. And to this day, I think there's still remnants of that chip, which are very important, because I think as good as things get in your life, I think it's very important to remember how hard you worked, struggles that you went through to get to the moments that are good, the best moments of your life, because I think that is a reminder to keep working hard, keep busting your ass. But at the same time, maybe that chip was a little bit too big and I depended on that a little bit too much, and instead of showing people what I could do, I would tell them. And there was a moment early on when one of the guys that I really credit for a lot of my training, Josh Prohibition, he pulled me aside and he told me, you're a dickhead. And no one likes you because you run your mouth and you cause problems. And if you continue to act this way, I don't want to have my name associated with you. And you're going to blackball yourself from wrestling. And that was a wake-up call for me, because I respected Josh Prohibition so much. Him and MDog 20, I think, were pioneers in independent wrestling, really transcending what an independent wrestler could do. You know, you talk about guys that can really make a living on the independent level in 2020. I don't know if that's possible if it isn't for guys like Josh Prohibition and MDog, who really transcended just the local shows by appearing in that backyard wrestling game back in 2003. I mean, that was my first exposure to them, and it made me believe that a wrestler could come out of Cleveland, Ohio, because before there was The Miz, there was really nobody. Like, we had Al Snow out of Lima, and that was pretty much all you could see on national television. And now today, it's crazy to think about, there are so many guys that come out of Northeast Ohio that have made it to the top of the industry. It's pretty humbling. But I'm going off on a tangent here, but the general idea was, if it wasn't for Josh Prohibition pulling me aside that day and telling me, look, show people what you can do and shut the F up, I don't know if we'd be having this conversation right now. So at the end of the day, the biggest obstacle was myself. And I feel like that's the biggest obstacle for most people, whether it's in a negative way as far as your attitude, thinking you have to be on defense, or just the idea of thinking you can't accomplish things and listening to the lies that people tell you. Because when you enter something like professional wrestling, even if I would have had the best attitude, I think I would have been surrounded by people that would have thought it was ridiculous. Not only because pro wrestling isn't something that everyone does, but I'm 5'4 and I have cerebral palsy. There was a lot of outside forces surrounding me and telling me that I couldn't do this. And I think there comes a point where you need to tune out the voices, not listening to your brain necessarily, and just start listening to your heart. I sound like a fortune cookie right now.
You know, it's funny that you say you sound like a fortune cookie, but a lot of what you just said echoes shades of just my own experience in life, because you're right. Sometimes when you have this defining thing that you go into it going, this is the thing that everybody's going to say defines me, and you're so defiant about it and almost come off the wrong way about it. Now you're letting it define you in the worst way possible. And all of a sudden, like you said, you are your own biggest obstacle. So I think that that's very relatable. And it's not just for this, it's for so many things. We see people get so caught up in one aspect of their lives that they forget it's a puzzle and that's just one piece. And yeah, I appreciate that. As much as, you know, it might seem like it's just everyday life for you, it's very, very relatable.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I think that's, you know, I'm going on 15 years in professional wrestling, and I like to think that that's one of the reasons why people connect with me, because I'm very okay with being vulnerable and open. And sometimes it's hard to come to terms with, but I'm okay with owning up to mistakes that I've made in my life. And I think, I don't know, people can see a genuine person, and I just want to be open and honest, and I want to be the individual. I don't know, if someone looks up to me and finds inspiration in the things that I've accomplished or done, that's really cool. I think I'm just myself at the end of the day, but like more than anything, I just want to show people that if you're just a decent person and you're just real and upfront about the struggles you go through, I think you'll get a lot farther, and you'll find that at the times where you felt alone or you think that no one else has gone through the things you've gone through, you'll find a lot of people have, and it helps to be relatable.
That's very well said. And one of the people you looked up to growing up was a person that would eventually become a tag team partner for you, and that's Zach Gowen. Now, what was your first meeting like with Zach Gowen? Had you already had that moment of clarity where it's like, okay, I need to not be a dickhead, or were you still like in your own head when you first met Zach Gowen?
I think I was a little bit in my own head, but at that point, I already had the conversation with Josh Prohibition. So the first time I met Zach, I had that conversation with Josh in October, and then I met Zach later in October of 2006. And first time I met Zach, he just kind of was dismissive and sort of a dickhead. And Zach, little did I know, he was going through his own turmoil and struggles with addiction and alcoholism. And he wasn't the best person I've ever met upon my first meeting. And it was one of those things where after I met him, I couldn't come to terms with the fact that he was a kind of an asshole. And then it just hit me one day, and I was like, man, that was not a good experience. And he didn't really offer anything to me. I really went to him for advice and tried to sit down with him, and he just kind of brushed me off. And I did at least one more show with him at some point. I remember him kind of making fun of me in the locker room. I was like, I think I hate this guy. He's a horrible person. And fast forward to 2010, he gets out of rehab, and I just happen to be the first person that he teams with and has a match with once his rehab is all said and done. And for a long time, promoters have been saying they wanted to put us together because I was a disabled wrestler and Zach was a disabled wrestler, and no one had ever done it. It was just weird, the timing of which it happened. And me and Zach teamed, we had chemistry. We had a, no pun intended, handicap match. It was 2-on-1. We beat this big guy. It was somewhere in West Virginia. And I remember Gowen was like a different person. And it was pretty clear at that point that the reason he was the way he was when I met him the first time was drugs, you know, and he had flipped his life around for the better. And he had pitched to me after the fact that he enjoyed working with me so much that maybe we could be a tag team. And I literally remember calling my dad, and my dad doesn't understand my passion and my love for wrestling. And he's kind of reserved with his emotions. He doesn't know how to express himself. And I remember calling my dad and like almost crying that Zach was so good to me because it was, I don't know, I get emotional over wrestling, man. I mean, I get emotional in general. I'm probably more emotional than most people realize, but when it comes to wrestling and life moments like that, where he was a guy that when I was 16, he didn't realize it, but he really pushed me and inspired me to get into this profession. And now I get to share a ring with him, and now he's coming to me wanting to be a tag team, and it was just really overwhelming. So I wish I could say that the first impression was great, but it wasn't. But the general idea is Zach made up for it after the fact, and now I can sit here and say that he's one of my best friends, which is crazy, and it'll never stop being surreal to say that.
I think that's more to the point of sometimes it doesn't always have to end at the first impression. You know, we are people, we are building, and Zach turned around for the better, and that's really cool. I remember when I started seeing you guys teaming, it made all the sense in the world, and I remember thinking at the time, like, well, of course they'd put the two disabled guys together. You know, why are they doing that? But obviously you guys do have great chemistry, and Zach's gone on to do great things. He was on American Ninja Warrior. He's really in a good place in his life. And that's great to see that it doesn't always have to end in the dark spot. You know, you can come out of it. And that's just really awesome and a really great story. Now, when I started watching you, you were in Pro Wrestling Ohio, and you were wrestling a guy who, by the name of Johnny Gargano. Now that's an indie name, and I'm sure we'll never get anywhere, but obviously he's gone everywhere, and he's literally the prodigy of Shawn Michaels these days. What is that like for you as Johnny's friend to see, like, Shawn Michaels loves this guy, Triple H loves this guy?
I mean, it's weird, but it's also not, you know, I mean, I'm biased because Johnny's my best friend and we lived together for so long and we trained together. I feel like in a lot of ways we found ourselves, we grew up together, you know, like both inside and outside of wrestling. And I think wrestling helped us do that in a lot of ways. But, you know, I used to always tell Johnny when we were like working out and stuff that one day he was going to be in the WWE and he was going to be the champion. Like, I'm not very certain about a lot of things, but I've always kind of been certain about that because there's just something about Johnny. He's a different breed. I can't even describe it. Like, he's like me in a lot of ways, which is why we're best friends. He'll never show it, but he's got this stupid sense of humor that I have. I mean, he's showing it kind of now on NXT, but he's a little morbid off camera, and he's got a little bit of a dark sense of humor, and he just jokes about ridiculous stuff, and that's why we communicate well. But he's a hard worker. He's dedicated. And, you know, he would tell me back in the day that when he'd go to sleep at night, he had a hard time shutting his brain off. And I would always say, why are you such a weirdo? Just go to bed. And he would say, I keep thinking about wrestling and I'll think of spots. And it's something I talked about on my podcast with the Iron on Wrestling, because I don't think anyone else knows that about him. And so I was able to pull that out of him because I asked him if he thought that's why he was on a different level and if he still does that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And I don't know, I think he's more, maybe that was a little bit of an insecurity with him, but he thinks about wrestling nonstop. I mean, he's able to sleep better. Maybe that helps that he has a beautiful wife and everything. But, you know, it's always going on in his brain. And just the fact that a guy like Shawn Michaels, who arguably the greatest of all time, you know, why wouldn't Shawn connect with that? It's pretty awesome to know that we used to sit in a room, he and I, where his mom painted Shawn Michaels on his wall. Like, that's how much he loved Shawn Michaels. And now, I mean, I don't know if he wants me to share this, but I don't care because it's a funny story. You know, he told me recently that Shawn Michaels walked up to him at TV and saw a pair of shoes that Johnny was wearing, some sort of like workout shoes or running shoes. He's like, "Oh, Johnny, where'd you get those shoes?" And Johnny told him. And literally the next day at TV, Shawn Michaels had the same shoes that Johnny had on. He's like, "Hey, Johnny, look. And, you know, I know Johnny sharing that story with me. It was like, what the heck is my life, you know? And like a couple of years ago, we were just talking about how he's always communicating with Shawn Michaels. And I frequently talk to Stone Cold Steve Austin. And these are the two guys that really, in a lot of ways, ushered in the Attitude Era with WrestleMania 14. What is life? Like, well, how is this happening? And Johnny was like, "Let's just go with it." And I said, "Yeah, let's just go with it. Like, why is this happening? Who knows? Who cares? It's happening, and it's pretty cool."
That is awesome. And really, it's a testament to the love of wrestling and how something that simple is really the thing that connects all of us. Because I believe it was Kevin Nash who said once, if you really wanted to be in the clique, all you needed to do was love wrestling. And as you just described, Johnny clearly loves wrestling. And with that being said, does Johnny genuinely hate wheels?
he's not a fan, man. You know, and also maybe that's the reason why he didn't start driving until he was like 23 or 24. He legitimately didn't get his license until about that time period. Like, I would always be the, I mean, I am in 440. I was always the wheel man. I mean, that's the way it's always been. And when we need to go somewhere, like, Johnny swears this isn't true, but I think he was afraid to drive for a long time because, if I'm correct, and I could be a little wrong, I'd have to re-ask him the story. I remember him telling me there was an incident with him driving a go-kart when he was younger, and it like went off of the track. And maybe I'm like making up part of the story, but like it went off the track a little bit, and like he didn't get hurt or anything, but it just gave him some weird phobia of driving. And so he like waited until he was like 24, 25. So, I mean, those wheels, they're nothing to mess with.
It's clear that wheels versus Johnny needs to be a WrestleMania match in the future.
I think so.
You know, so there's another WrestleMania big time player who, shortly after what is now 10 years later, a legendary promo and a legendary moment of his own career, came out to an independent show and said to you, "You're fucking awesome." And that was CM Punk. And what did that moment do for you? Have you ever kept up with Punk in the 10 years since? And looking back on it, what did CM Punk do for Gregory Iron in that moment?
Well, I think it's simple. You know, CM Punk really gave me a career in wrestling. I was at a crossroads in my life where I didn't know where this wrestling thing was going to go. I was sort of wondering and waiting, like, as to like when someone's going to notice how hard I'm working at professional wrestling. And, you know, I'd always seek advice from people that had more success in wrestling than me. One of those people was Colt Cabana. Colt shared my story with Punk. Punk was able to give me the incredible opportunity of publicly endorsing me in a ring in Chicago, and I had no clue what was going to happen. And I don't know, if he didn't shine that spotlight on me, I don't know how much longer I would have gone in wrestling. I mean, there's a part of me that thinks that I'm too dumb to quit, and I would have kept fighting, and I would have found some other way to make a name for myself. But if it's not for CM Punk and Colt Cabana, I don't know if there's a spotlight on me as quick as there was. And as far as keeping up with him, you know, we had a long conversation that night in Chicago, probably for like 45 minutes or an hour. It was one of the coolest conversations of my life. And it didn't even seem real because just none of that day, that evening, that moment made sense. I don't know if it ever will, because I loved CM Punk. You know, he was one of the reasons why I wanted to be so dedicated to being straight edge. And as far as keeping up with him, literally the only thing that we've done in the years since is we've exchanged tweets about Sheets and Wawa back and forth, because he's a Wawa guy and I'm a Chiefs guy, and I don't think I heard from him for about 7 years, and then all of a sudden he just started tweeting at me about Wawa being better than Sheets, me and the Blade, Andy Williams, and or the Butcher, and that's what we tweet about. We tweet about Wawa and Sheets. It's really weird and random.
Now you're dedicated to Sheets, like
I am.
You're a Sheets guy all the way through. By default, I'm a Wawa guy. I haven't had a Sheets. I've had a few Wawa shakes. I think they're very good. So what's your favorite thing to get when you stop at a Sheets?
Well, right now, as soon as we're done with this interview, I have for my cheat day a made-to-order steak, eggs, and taters burrito. It is delicious. I eat this when I want to eat bad. I also have some mac and cheese bites. They're very delicious. I'm going to dip them in some cheese. They also have a great soft pretzel. On a regular basis, I can also eat healthy there. They have great salads, and they have a very lean turkey wrap that I enjoy as well. In fact, I'm so dedicated to Sheets, I'm actually as a part of the Sheets Insiders Club, which is only about 500 people in the entire world. I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
I mean, there it is. The loyalty is there. But so you mentioned The Butcher. You've mentioned Colt Cabana. They're in AEW. Obviously, Johnny Gargano is your best friend. He's in NXT. When, if ever, will we see Gregory Iron on a global stage?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would love the opportunity to wrestle for any company that will pay me, quite frankly. I mean, I love what NXT's doing. I love what AEW's doing. Obviously, I've been a WWE kid my whole life. But I have to be honest with myself as I'm getting older. I'm 34. For whatever reason, I think when you're in your 20s, you always put a timetable on getting signed to a contract. And me and a lot of other guys would always go, well, if I'm not signed by the time I'm 30, I'm done. But as you get older, you realize a couple things. A, this obsession, this passion for wrestling isn't going anywhere. And B, most of the most successful pro wrestlers really have their prime years in their late 30s and early 40s. And I don't know. I think there is a spot for me on TV. I think there's a great story that I can tell through my character and through my real story, and I could parlay that into an audience that may not necessarily be wrestling. However, if I could just contribute to pro wrestling in any way, shape, or form, even behind the scenes, I think I'm okay with that because I've learned in the past couple of years that I really love teaching, and just sometimes I feel like, you know, cerebral palsy is technically brain damage, right? So I've always felt like, because I'm very limited in what I can do as an athlete, I've always had a better wrestling brain than a wrestling body. And I really love explaining things to people, the little things in between moves that make things work, the storytelling, the professional wrestling, the promos. And then I like seeing, after I teach this to a kid, him going out and doing those things and learning and understanding. It's thrilling for me. So if I can just contribute in some way and make a couple bucks, I don't need to be rich. I don't want to be rich. I just want to be comfortable. I was a poor kid growing up. Maybe a part of me still has that poor kid mentality. I just want to do wrestling because I love it and be able to take care of myself. I think that's the ultimate dream.
Well, that was very well said. And again, parallels to so many different things. I couldn't agree more about knowing that the brain for wrestling that you end up developing just through the sheer passion, it can sometimes supersede the fact that maybe you're not the most athletic. And for you, because you've been in the industry for 15 years, I can't imagine how much that knowledge and that passion has expanded and how much you're able to actually help other wrestlers. But like we've mentioned this, people can be dicks. When you're mentoring a young wrestler, has anybody ever just completely blown you off for the sheer fact of what does this guy really know? And, you know, look at how he wrestles and look at what he's working with.
I don't know if that's what's going through their mind. I mean, I know there's kids that have blown me off, or you can tell when you're trying to give them advice. There's a lot of yeah, but guys in the locker room now. It's like, you know, hey, sir, can you watch my match? And I'll go, sure. And I'll watch the match. And then I'll give them honest feedback. And their first response is, yeah, but. And you know, like, what I think a lot of these kids ask for advice because they're taught to ask for advice, but they're not taught to listen. Like, that's the point of asking for advice. And I don't know everything. I'm still learning. I'm learning all the time. But I like to think that there are things that I've learned and experienced and done in wrestling that a younger kid that wants to be successful in this can learn from. You know, it's one of those things where you have a lot of voices listening to you all around you, or listening to you. You have a lot of voices that you can listen to all around you as you're coming up in wrestling. And sometimes it's hard to decipher who to listen to. But I think the best advice that I could give someone is you listen to the people that you see have success and you want to be in their position. You listen to those people. And so maybe guys don't want to be in my position. That's fine. Maybe they don't want to go to the places that I've gone to. That's fine. We all have different goals and aspirations. But I'd like to think that, you know, if you listen to the guys that have done things, I think you'll get success. And you'll find that if you genuinely want advice from someone that has had success, it doesn't cost anything. And those people will be willing to share that advice because they want other people to be successful. So just gotta ask questions. Again, if I didn't ask questions to Cole Cabana, my thing with CM Punk doesn't happen. And if I don't befriend people and I'm a genuine person to people, like, for example, Andy Williams, he's the reason why I ended up on Stanford Steve Austin's podcast, because I wanted to help him as a wrestler. So we got to wrestle at a warp for 1 year. We became friends. He did Stanford's podcast with Pepper Parks and Allie. And he said, hey, if you were ever in California, I think I can get you on Stanford's podcast. I think your story would be great on there. I just happen to be going to California. I go do Stanford's podcast, and now I'm friends with Stanford Steve Austin. And my mind will never decipher why that's a thing. But it's like, just be a good dude. Like, that's all. Like, that's the point of my rambling.
Yeah, that's so surreal to even think about being friends with a megastar, the guy who is probably solely responsible for WWE even being able to go public, is Stone Cold Steve Austin, and you're just able to text him like an average person. And that's the cool joys of wrestling, that I love hearing those stories, because it shows that success comes in so many different forms. It's not just the main event of WrestleMania and the World Championship. It's just reaching these little personal milestones that let you know that you've made it. Yeah. So as we wrap up here, we've talked a lot about representation, and GCW is huge on representation. Going into this next collective in Tampa, there's For the Culture, and Effie's going to do another Big Gay Brunch, and all these events. Now, obviously, I don't think there's an extensive list of disabled professional wrestlers, but if there were, have you been on the lookout? Have you thought about, hey, maybe there's a place for more of us in GCW, or just trying to find more representation in the disabled community in professional wrestling?
You know, that's a good question. It's something that I haven't thought super in depth about, but I think about it a lot in terms of sharing those stories on my podcasting platform, Iron On Wrestling. You know, I just sat down and talked with a man by the name of Adam Pearson, that, you know, he was born with a facial disfigurement because of MS type 1. I recently sat down and talked with a young lady by the name of Vet Adams, who lost her leg in a motorcycle accident and then decided to become a professional wrestler. I think there are a lot of people, both inside and outside of the wrestling ring, that are very productive within the wrestling community. They contribute a lot. And I think, you know, people lose sight about how prevalent people with disabilities and people with developmental disabilities are within professional wrestling. And it is nice to see that representation. However, at the same time, while we all have dreams and goals, you know, there's some people that their ultimate goal is just to be in the ring. And I often have to tell these people with disabilities that the most important thing, first and foremost, is to be safe. And there are some people with disabilities that being in the ring isn't exactly the safest thing in the world. But that doesn't mean your dream has to end. And you can contribute in other facets of professional wrestling. If I would not have become a professional wrestler, I would be doing what you're doing right now, Robert. I'd probably be doing podcasting. I would hopefully be trying to do commentary within professional wrestling, writing for television or for a magazine. Like, those were my initial goals. Luckily, it was safe for me to wrestle. And, you know, now we're having this conversation today. But I think just at the end of the day, representation from all walks of life is important. And if I can be some sort of beacon of hope for the disabled community, I love being that. And I think there are a lot of talented athletes out there that, you know, are missing limbs, that have disabilities, mental and physical, that have done a lot of things in professional wrestling that no one thought possible. And just a couple decades ago, maybe they wouldn't even got a chance for that. So to be able to sit here today and see so many representations in that community in professional wrestling, it's a pretty cool and powerful thing.
Well, again, personally, I thank you for at least opening the door to say, hey, this is possible. And I'm sure I'm not the only person over the years that's told you that. So it does matter. And I am grateful for you. Now, I know outside of wrestling and your podcast, you also do a lot of motivational speaking. Tell me about that and tell me about why that is something that you feel through the years has helped you spread your message just as much as the world of wrestling.
Motivational speaking has been literally, and I'm not joking, it's the only thing that I've ever done in my life that has given me the same feeling that professional wrestling does. And it's wild to even hear myself say that, because I don't know if there was going to be anything in my life that I ever had the passion for that I have for professional wrestling. But there's something about, even for a moment, being that person that goes into a school and talks to a kid, and is like, to be able to be that person that I needed when I was a kid, and sort of connect with young men and women and know the struggles that they're going through, and being able to be vulnerable with them and them open up to me and share their stories to make them feel like they're not alone, to be that person. I mean, it feels just as good as suicide diving out of the ring, man. Like, I just, there's a feeling that I get from pro wrestling that I couldn't find in any other walk of life. And I don't think it's because I couldn't find something that requires me to yell or jump or pretend to be some crazy person sometimes. Like, doing that crossbody, that suicide dive, that gives you a certain feeling. But at the end of the day, it's all rooted in passion. And I think when I speak to kids, it's rooted in passion. And just to be able to be relatable to them and to help them with their struggles and to hopefully connect with even one person on a deeper level, to where they see me and they go, you know what? This weird handicapped guy is doing it. Why can't I be a weird, whatever I am? Why can't I just be a weirdo and be successful at my dream? Like, that's a pretty powerful thing, and I'm happy to be that guy. It's nice, but at the end of the day, too, like, it gives me a feeling, the same thing that wrestling gives me, that money can't buy. And that's what's the most important thing to me, because money comes and goes. But this is all we have at the end of the day when we go to bed at night. And just, I love speaking to kids. It's amazing.
Very well said. And obviously, yeah, you're going to continue on your journey in wrestling. 440, I'm sure, will have a lot of representation in Tampa for WrestleMania weekend and plenty of times before that. So where can the fans catch you on social media, in the ring? What is it? Where is it that we can best support Gregory Iron?
Well, if you want to support me, you can support the podcast first and foremost. We drop episodes every Wednesday, Iron on Wrestling, on iTunes and all major podcasting platforms. And if you like what you hear from Iron on Wrestling, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/irononwrestling, where not only do you get podcast material a day early, you get extended podcasts, you get bonus bonus episodes, but you actually get bonus stuff from my career. And I'm even more vulnerable on Patreon than I am in real life on social media. I share stuff that I'm not going to share on social media, pictures, videos, old matches, full events. There's so much on the Patreon. It starts at just $3, and I'll follow you back on social media so we can DM directly all the time. And it's not just a content creating community. I think we're creating just a pro wrestling community in general. You know, it's not about the content. It's about, like, these connections. When we get off of here, I'm going to do a Zoom call with guys that pay $5 and up, and we talk for an hour, sometimes 2 hours, once a month. it's a cool experience. So I suggest you check it out. That's patreon.com/ironandwrestling. And then you can follow me on Instagram @Gregory_Iron, or you can find me on Twitter @GregoryIron. And if you want to book me for wrestling or motivational speaking, perhaps a seminar, I'm available to DM for those things.
All right. And because I need a wacky headline for this, and I'm sure you'll be the guy to answer this, who would Johnny Gargano say wins in a fight, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or DX?
Man, I think he's picking the Turtles. I mean, they can use their weapons, right? I mean, that makes the most sense.
That is true. I mean, that is, when you put it that way, yeah, that's pretty black and white about it. That's true. They got weapons. DX, they do have a tank, though. They might be able to make it work with the tank.
That's true. And if we pick the Ninja Turtles from part two of the movie, they actually weren't allowed to use the weapons in that movie because part one was rated too violent. So I guess if we're thinking in terms of that, I don't know. Maybe it would just be a draw. I don't know. I can't pick one or the other. That's rough.
And that is rough. Greg, thank you so much for taking the time. And I look forward to hopefully doing this again very soon.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
All right, guys. So again, if you want to check out Greg, follow him on Twitter @GregoryIron. Follow everything we're doing @FightfulWrestle. Follow Fightful Select. Subscribe today. You got all your breaking news. Sean Ross Sapp breaks all the news every day. There's always something dropping. So keep supporting. And until next time, we're out.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.